come join the conversation, the show that you've been wanting. Keep it real with no filter, weekly we share discussions. WWSD, interviewing creative guests, talking the creative process and sharing all the influences from TV and film. Emmy nominated and winning, yeah, they coming through. Actors and comedians too, directors and writers, way more than a few. Masters of their craft, yes, tune in, you gotta see. This the podcast that you need, WWSD.
Welcome to the WWSD podcast. Weekly, we share discussions with interesting and creative people. I'm your host, Josh, and as always, I'm joined by my buddy and co-host, Seamus. How you doing, Seamus?
Doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I'm excited for tonight.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Who do we have on?
Oh, tonight we are joined by not just by one guest, we're joined by two fantastic guests from the hit new Chris Pratt TV series on Amazon Prime, The Terminal List. We are excited to welcome actors Alex Angelakis and John Adkins. Alex and John have both worked on the series together as recurring members of the FBI Elite Hostage Rescue Team, and they're super cool. We're super excited to talk to you guys today. How are you guys doing?
Good, man. How are you guys?
Doing good. Doing good.
Yeah, we're doing great, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, thanks for having us, fellas. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Could both of you kind of give a little bit about your background in the military and then coming into the industry?
I served 6 years in the Air Force as an Air Force medic stationed at Los Angeles Air Force Base the entire time. From there, I separated. I was thinking about going career, but luckily at that time, I got accepted to USC for the Masters of Business for Veterans program, so which kind of helped with, you know, transitioning out of the military into civilian life. So my stint in the military was very short but sweet, very rewarding, and with a lot of experiences and met a bunch of amazing people.
Yeah, it's funny, like 6 years is short, but a lot of people, a lifetime.
Yeah, it's very short. Yeah, for sure.
And what about you, Alex?
So I was in the Marine Corps for 8 years, come from infantry background, so I was a machine gunner. Did a couple deployments, one deployment to Iraq, did a couple MUs, and then I was kind of like in the same boat as John. Like I hit my 4 year mark and I was like, all right, well, I don't think I want to stay. Like, I'm kind of done. Like I did what I came here to do, but I didn't know what I was going to do after. So I was like, I don't want to be like one of those on the Marines and get out and have nothing to do and then find myself right back in. Right. So I found my way into tattooing. So when I was like, right about, like I did another 4 years. So like I was about to get out after that second enlistment, I'd go from like Camp Pendleton to Venice Beach, like every chance I got, man. And I'm like tattooing my homies in the barracks and, you know, tattooing myself, man. And then funny enough, through the tattoo shop, that's pretty much kind of how acting came back into my life, man. Like I did a little bit of it as a kid, not professionally or anything before I joined the Corps, but it was kind of just like a positive outlet for, you know, my mom was just trying to find a million places for me to go, keep me out of trouble as a kid. And then eventually you just kind of landed on that. So I didn't pursue it professionally as a kid or anything. I went to school for it for about 3 years and then that was kind of it. Joined the military, thought about it the whole time. And then it just came full circle back into my life, man, all those years later.
Still, you still tattooing?
No, and everybody always asks me that, bro. Like, hey, bro, you still do? One of my cousins, like, called me out of the blue, like, I don't know, man, maybe a week or two ago. And he's like, hey, man, still tattooing? And I'm like, no, dude, not anymore, bro. Like, everybody always asks me that, man. I can't remember the last time I drew anything, to be honest with you, dude.
I just haven't
done it.
Your first acting job when you got out of the military, Alex, like, what was that for you?
So what ended up happening is when I was working at this tattoo shop, they had Modern Family came to shoot an episode there. Owner of the shop was walking around asking everybody if they wanted to be an extra kind of thing because they needed some extras, right? So everybody was wanting to do it. I was like, no, like I'm here to tattoo. But like secretly, I was like, yeah, like I want to do it. But I was like, I'm not going to tell anybody that. So then I was like, I don't know. And then they, you know, they asked me to do it. I don't think I ever showed up in the episode or anything. But just being on the set, I guess just did something to me that I wasn't aware of at the time, but like all of my mentors immediately focused in on and saw. And I guess I was just like a completely different person. They're like, dude, like the whole 2 years you've been here, I've never seen you smile that much. And I'm like, okay, like I know what I'm supposed to be doing then. So immediately right after that, I had no clue what to do, but I was like, guess the best thing I could probably do is just try and go get on a set and just be around it more, you know? So I started just doing a bunch of extra stuff. So I'd drive down from Camp Pendleton to whatever show I'd get on that, you know, needed extra, whatever. And I go do that. A little bit before I got out, I went to work with one of my old drama teachers from when I was a kid. He had his own theater group and it was like a theater troupe that did like plays and repertory. So it's like, you know, you do like multiple plays at a time, you know, you'd be working on like multiple different characters at a time. So I started doing that and then eventually got out and I kept doing that, kept doing the extra stuff. And then I got into school. And then from there, like the first thing I ever did where somebody was, I trust you enough to let you say something, was a little student film that one of the people that befriended in school was like, hey, man, like, you're cool. Like, would you be interested in doing this? And I was like, dude, let's do it. So that's kind of like the very first thing I did. Super student. None of us knew what we were doing. I still don't know what I'm doing, but I'm figuring out.
Yeah, same here.
I'm sure it's a lot different than the big budget Amazon Prime show that you're currently doing. I'm sure it's a world of difference.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe a little bit.
And then, John, what about you? So you're in the Air Force for 6 years. How did that transition? I mean, you had your master's in business. What did you do to go to acting?
So after graduating from USC with that business degree, I kind of put my clinical experience as a medic in the Air Force, my education, and just transitioned back to the administrative part of a hospital. So I actually work at the VA hospital in West Los Angeles. I've been here for about 5 years. I've always had a love for like TV and film. Never thought about being an actor, but I guess I wanted to learn more about being behind the camera, directing, you know, editing, stuff like that. So on a whim, I started taking night classes at Los Angeles Film School. And during these classes, we needed actors to kind of like create these scripts that we'd write for ourselves and just, you know, kind of be in front of the camera to put it together. So people were in class like, oh, you're semi good looking. Why don't you just be in front of the camera for a little bit? So we make these student films. And then from there, I kind of fell in love with that process of like creating a character and being somebody completely different. Then started taking acting classes for a couple months. And then next thing I know, like I'm reaching out to agencies. And the first agency I went to, very small boutique agency, brand new, they signed me on the spot. Commercial stuff at first. And then my first two commercial auditions was for Toyota and Mini Cooper. And I booked both of them.
You're in a Mini Cooper commercial?
You're 6'5", dude.
I'm 6'4". I can't fit in one of those.
Everybody says that, man. But whichever Mini Cooper it was, I fucking fit, dude. It was hella spacious. I was very surprised myself. Yeah. From there, like I booked a couple commercials. This was only 3 years ago. Then COVID hit. So there's kind of like a big delay. And then last year I got that audition for Terminal List, and I booked it, and here I am, man, talking to you motherfuckers right now. So.
is that where you guys met? You guys met on the set of the Terminal List?
Yeah.
We did, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remain friends afterwards too and everything? Guests hang out?
I wouldn't say friends.
You wouldn't say friends? Acquaintances. Yeah, same with me and Josh. Like,
we had the Korean barbecue like 2 weeks ago. So oh, I nice. A lot, man. We're good friends.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I love Korean barbecue.
So I wouldn't want to be my friend either, man. So,
so the audition though, for the Terminal, it was an open casting call, or did your agents get you guys into that?
My agent sent requested. I guess they were looking for specifically for veterans to kind of play these roles.
Okay,
that's how I got my audition through my agent. So.
That's a cool thing about this show. Like hearing like Jack Carr talk about it. Jack Carr is the author of the book that this the Terminal List was based on. You know, it seems like having real veterans like fill those spots was very important.
100%. It's interesting, man, because like all my buddies from the Corps that I still talk to, all of them that have watched it already, a lot of these guys, you know, I've known a lot of these guys I still talk to for years at this point. You know, I mean, like a lot of us serve together, and you know, to see them kind of get emotional a little bit about like a lot of this, like really fucking hit home for me. You know what I'm like, the level of, you know, of authenticity that was displayed here, you know, not just on a tactical level, but just an energy level. That warrior tribe is like very unique, man. It got its own energy, man. It's like it's got its own life. So to see it really touch a lot of these guys and gals and, you know, really resonate with them like that, I think really, you know, really is just a testament to Jack wanting as many veterans as possible, man. And I think it did the show a tremendous justice. It helped a lot. It helped tell the story.
They feel like it's kind of an homage to their experience and everything that they've gone through.
I would say that. And, you know, the other thing is, too, is that, like, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, we're all older now. Like a lot of these, you know, a lot of these guys have kids. All my friends have kids except me. I'm the only one that's not married and has no kids. So all the guys in my platoon, you know, they're all, you know, 2, 3, 4 kids. But like that part of the story, you know, the father parenting part of the story mixed with the military part, it really brings them back. I remember being like that. Go on deployment, I'd have to leave my wife, kid. And so it just resonated a lot with these guys. And not only that, especially the opening scene in the first episode, you know, the firefight and that whole thing, and you know, that whole ambush, that hit hard for a lot of guys. Not in a bad way, you know what I'm saying? But it definitely immersed them back into that experience because of how well done it was. Me personally, like, I mean, there's been tons of great war films and all that kind of, you know, Saving Private Ryan and Black Hawk Down, I mean, tons, right? But even for me, like when we were all at the premiere and I, you know, watching this episode, that whole scene, man, I mean, I was starting to sweat, like my heart was starting to pound and I was like, it took me right back, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, damn, dude, like, you know, it just, it was that visceral. I've never seen anything like that raw, that close to it being the real thing. And again, I think that's just a testament to having, you know, a lot of vets being a part of that.
Did they hire any non-vet? I mean, obviously Chris Pratt's not a veteran. For like the guys like where you were working with, were there any non-veterans you were working with for those scenes?
Or the HRT was just vets, right? Like everybody else.
HRT was vets. Everybody in that first episode that was in the tunnel that played Navy SEALs were all Navy SEALs from my understanding. But then you got the bigger names like J.D. Pardo and obviously all the military stuff for sure. They were all vets.
Okay, that's really cool. Yeah. And then even like the audition portion of it, like what were they looking for during those auditions for you guys?
The original audition that I got was for that first scene as the Navy SEAL medic. I didn't get that role, but I guess they liked my audition enough to plug me into that first episode as the QRF medic that comes out in the Black Hawk and grabs one of the Navy SEALs and brings them into the chopper, you know, performs CPR. I yell at Chris Pratt. Yeah, so that process, I guess, it was just my military experience. And I remember getting on a callback with Jared Shaw, one of the associate producers, one of friends of Chris Pratt. And he was just asking basic questions like, oh, how, like he actually got had me stand up, go high port, low port, how I would hold a rifle, just movement, things like that, just to see like how it would look and feel on camera. That was the original process for me for that first episode, for that first role.
I imagine those kinds of things are really hard to fake for people that haven't gone through military training.
I think it just depends on like how open you are to learning. I think the reason it can be difficult is because I, you know, you get hundreds of thousands of hours trigger time and practice. Right. You know, I'm not even talking about like being on a deployment and getting time under your gun, but it's like a workup is at least as long as a deployment. My workup for Iraq was like 6 months, like something crazy like that. And it's just nonstop training, constantly getting time under the gun. But yeah, I would agree to, you know, it's kind of hard to fake, you know, hundreds of thousands of hours of practice. And the whole point is that they get you to a point where it's a muscle memory. It's like, you don't have to think about it. You know what I'm saying? It's just a natural thing that when you touch that specific tool, that rifle, that machine gun, that whatever it is that, you know, is your trade's weapon of choice, it's just automatic. You know what I'm saying? And it's just a natural thing, having an extension of your own arm. But I think it can be done. I mean, I watched Chris Pratt do it. I mean, Chris Pratt specifically, I did get a lot of time to watch him and it was really impressive, man. You know, I think when we got done doing 8, walked up to him and I was like, hey, man, I just wanted to let you know, man, like you're going to really blow a lot of people away with how well your weapons handling is and how well you've absorbed all the tactical techniques, you know, the TTPs that are being taught to you by badasses like Jared Shaw and Ray Mendoza, you know, and all these guys. And I think it's a testament to him having the good teachers too. You know, those guys know what they're doing. But it's also, you know, it was also on Chris. So it was impressive to see him really authentically look like he's had hundreds of thousands of hours of practice. I would guess, knowing him being friends with like Jared and Ray, he probably got thousands of hours of practice. I would imagine
he might have like years ago. He did what, Zero Dark 30 with Chad. So he has years of experience.
Yeah. There's that too, man.
Everything I've heard about him too is he has enough respect to really put everything he has into portraying like veterans.
What surprised me the most about Chris when I saw him in person was he's legit, like I'm 6'5", he's legit 6'2", 240. You know what I mean? Built like a linebacker. And he moves well as fuck, dude.
He's a big dude.
Come a long way since Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
You're a big dude. Yeah, 100%. 100%.
I feel like that's why he has to prove himself so hard with all these roles, because like everyone's like, oh, it's Andy from Parks and Rec. Like no, dude, I'm Chris Pratt.
Right.
I loved him as Andy in Parks and Rec, though. Yeah. He's fucking hilarious.
It's so hard, like, to see him, like, not as Andy. I was talking to my brother before doing the podcast tonight about it, and it's just, like, I know he's done so much since then, and, like, so many big roles, and, like, he's so iconic at this point. Like, my son's 3 years old, and he knows him as Chris Pratt. So he'll see him in Jurassic Park or Guardians. He's like, Chris Pratt. Star-Lord. It's just, but he doesn't know him as Star-Lord. He just knows him as Chris Pratt, and so it's even funnier.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But, like, yeah, it's just He's definitely done such a crazy transformation over the years. But Alex, what about your interview process? Like, was it very similar to John's, where they were kind of looking for more of the technique?
So my manager at the time got another friend of John and I's, who's another co-star on the show, Nate Boyer, because we had the same manager at the time. So Nate got an audition for Boozer, who's the character that Jared plays in the show. So then the same day I helped Nate with that tape, immediately like got a hold of my manager. I was like, dude, I was like, you remember that show I was telling you about that was like coming up? We got to try and get in there for him. And then literally the next day I had a tape for the same exact character, man. So then I did that. And it was an interesting process, man. I mean, it was long. So like I auditioned for Boozer, obviously didn't get Boozer. And then I got another audition like maybe a couple months later, and it's for like two other characters, and then nothing out of that. And third time was the charm, I guess, man. I auditioned for Smitty, and funny enough, Olsen, who are one of our co-stars and good buddies, Mahdi was the guy who played him. And I got Smitty, and I think that was like, I mean, dude, that was, if I remember correctly, I started like, I guess, auditioning, I think at the beginning of the year. Is that where like around you got your, yeah.
I first got mine was like February, March.
Yeah. Yeah, man. You know, like damn near the beginning of the year. And I didn't end up walking on a set having a job until, when did we shoot? July? Like mid-July?
June, July for episode 6 for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, it was a bit of time. Yeah, that's kind of how it worked. And like every time I did it, They would say in like, you know, because you get like actors get like, you know, these little breakdowns. It's like, you know, who your character is, what the story is, like who's attached mm-hmm. to it, all, you know, how much they're gonna pay you, like all that kind of stuff. Just like all that basic information. One of the things that every time I sent in a tape, they wanted you to like explain your military experience. So I did that every single time I did a tape. Yeah, so that was my extent of it. I never got tested like John did. I didn't get asked to do any weapon stuff, man.
Because I was Air Force, they had to make sure that I had that experience.
I was gonna ask. I didn't know how I was gonna ask that, but
I don't want to say anything, man. You know what I'm saying?
It's all right. There's a beauty requirement for the Air Force that obviously Marines don't have.
Yeah, right.
Marines are hideous, man. Yeah. The uglier the better, bro.
Good. Like the Air Force looks good on pamphlets, right?
Exactly, 100%.
Did they give you shit for being like in the Air Force, John? Or was there, because I'm sure there was like Navy SEALs and like badass kind of guys.
God, yeah. All the time. So he just mentioned Nate Boyer, who's actually a good friend of ours. He's Special Forces Green Beret, you know, high speed guy. So every time they get on set and like people would ask me like, oh, like JD Pardo was like, oh, where'd you serve? And I was like, oh, Air Force, and fucking Nate in the back, Chair Force. Pretty boy. I'm like, all right, Nate, like, come on, dude. Like, I can't help that, bro. You know?
How happy are you that there's a Space Force now? You can take some of the heat off of you.
Extremely. Exactly. Call it Nerd Force. No. I'm totally kidding. Yeah, I got shit for it, but it's, I mean, like, it comes with the territory, and like, I just, you know, let it roll off my shoulders. It means they care, right?
So, right. Yeah.
Tough love, man.
Tough love, exactly.
Space Force, though, man. Dude, what the fuck does the Space Force do, man? I have this weird, like, weird imagining that it's like Halo or some shit. Like, I don't know.
No.
I mean, they probably play a lot of Halo.
Probably do, bro.
Hanging out.
Hey, sign me up, dude. I'm with
you. It's probably a constant land party up there.
I remember my roommate, my college roommate and all, he actually went to the Marine Corps. And I remember we were joking where we were trying to fill out like his, I think it's an MOS where he's trying to pick his occupation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is Space Marine on there? And he's like, oh God, if only.
Oh, like Halo. Like, Halo. Yes,
and now that's a thing probably with the Space Force. So.
Yeah, they got to join up with the Marine Corps.
It's like its own branch. It's like super top secret.
I want to go to Space Marine school. Like, what's that? It's like,
Oh man, that's funny. Yeah, that was pretty much my process. So,
I mean, obviously, like what you guys were doing, you guys are kind of like a unit. Like, you kind of have that like unit mindset. You guys have to kind of be like in that space and all. Did you guys spend a lot of time like not like necessarily like practicing, but like being a unit? Like, were you guys like always together and doing everything together?
I'd say for the most part, right, John? I mean, pretty much.
It felt like I was in the military, honestly. Like we ate chow together, we hung out together, urinated together. As weird as that sounds, but it's just, you know, that's as
it's bonding.
As a tea, as a, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You got to piss together.
Exactly.
It's just being bros.
No, like it just felt like that camaraderie that you get while in the military. It just kind of transitioned to this film set because there's so many military members around. So it just felt like one big reunion, honestly.
And did you have any issues with like non-military people, like some other consultants or producers that weren't really military, or was everyone just kind of military related?
Out of even like the wardrobe and props. No, props.
Props had two guys who were Marine Corps, I think.
Yeah. It was like vents everywhere, bro.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
We would go get our gear every morning and, you know, they would shoot the shit with them and they would get the shit. So, you know, I got shit from the fucking Marine the gear guy, too.
You got shit from the props guys, right?
Yeah, Jesus. The prop guy was giving me shit. Oh, God. I remember that now.
Yeah, it's funny, man. I remember we're going up to like get all of our gear, our plate carriers and our gun belts and all that kind of stuff, our buckets, our helmets and all that. And I walk up and I can't remember. I wasn't even like directly I think I was talking to Nate or somebody. I was like, hey, like, you know, but I said it loud enough to where like other people could hear it. And I was like, oh, do we get like the flak jackets here and all that? And then this guy like turns around and he was just like, who said flak jacket? It's like, I know that came from a Marine. I was like, who's that? And I was like, that's funny. And then come to find out, this dude was also a Marine. Funny enough, he was also, I think he was in the reserves, but he was a part of 5th Marines, which that was my last unit. My last unit was 2-5. Yeah. So like 5th Marines is like 2-5, 3-5, 1-5. Yeah, man, it was crazy. There was events everywhere. It was literally like everywhere.
And then what about like when you guys do acting for non-military shows? Like, is that hard? I would imagine doing a terminal is kind of, like you said, kind of felt like a little bit at home since you're kind of used to that lifestyle. But like doing like a comedy or like something dramatic, not military, is that weird?
A lot of the auditions that I get is for non-military stuff. This could be like the funny guy or the boyfriend or the dad. So being a father and bringing that natural civilian part of my life into auditions, it's pretty like a natural thing for me, I guess. I don't know about Alex.
Yeah, no, I like John, I actually get a lot of auditions that are not military related at all. Occasionally, like I got one recently that I have to do. I mean, dude, no joke. It's like every once in a blue moon. But honestly, like for me, I actually prefer it that way. I don't mind doing the military stuff, but I already did that. So it's like, for me, it's like, obviously it depends on the story and character and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, for me, all the other stuff, it challenges me more, I feel like, because it's military things in my wheelhouse. So, you know, it's like, if I want to get better at my craft, it's like, I got to constantly force myself into positions that are like not into my wheelhouse.
Yeah. I wasn't sure like it possibly in like typecast and all, because I'm sure like when they're reviewing like your packet, they see like military background. They're like, oh, this would be perfect, this military show or movie or whatever. So I wasn't sure if you're going to typecast into these type roles, but that's good. You guys aren't.
Yeah, I'm very, very fortunate for that so far anyway. Again, like I said, nothing wrong with it, but I would just prefer to explore the other.
So you're saying you don't want to reprise Smitty in Terminal of Season 2? Okay, fine.
Smitty has to come back, then Smitty will honor his commitment and come back.
All right, Alex. Sure, buddy.
Has there been any talks of a Season 2 yet or anything like that?
I don't know, to be honest.
I hope it does. Well, like, first came out, I was like, you know, there's some like lefties that were complaining about it, but I think it's done pretty well now. You know, it seems like even on Rotten Tomatoes, like the fan score is really high. You know, I think it's doing well.
And like you guys said, it was very authentic and all. Like I enjoyed it all. I thought it was awesome. Like it wasn't over the top. It wasn't ridiculous. It was very realistic, very grounded. Just an awesome show. You guys actually did such a great job. Like not just you guys, but like everyone on that team.
Yeah.
Fantastic work.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I thought it's very interesting, right? Because it's really not a military show. It's got a military element to it, but it's a drama, you know, it's a thriller.
Yeah.
I appreciated the fact that it was, you know, it was very much, it was all about the story. You know, the military component was just that. It was a component of it, but it was not the identity of the piece.
Yeah, it wasn't Saving Private Ryan or anything. Where yeah, it's the whole backdrop. Yeah,
you know, which is great. You know, that's what that is. But I think, you know, Terminalist has a lot of unique qualities going for it because it's kind of, you know, an amalgamation of things. You know, you have the, you know, the military element, but then you have the psychological element, and then you have the family, and it's like, and then it's a drama dealing with, you know, corruption and finding truth and
revenge.
It's, I mean, you're just kind of sitting at the edge of your seat the entire time watching it. Like, it's just, it's like that classic thriller where it's like, all right, what's gonna happen next? Let's see what's the next thing. And then
I think that's some of the biggest magic of the show, because like anybody I've talked to, man, just said the same thing. It's like, dude, I wanted to watch another one. I just wanted to keep going. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, even when it was over, I was like, oh, like, what's the next thing? And I'm like, that's good.
It's awesome.
And at the end of the day, you know, like you were just talking about, Seamus, it's like, you know, you see the audience score, and it's like, at the end of the day, like, that's the most important thing, because, you know, as a storytelling process, there's two people that have two different jobs. One is the storyteller, the other is the listener. Storyteller does their job and tells their story, do it as compelling and as interestingly as they possibly can, right? Then it's the audience's turn, once that's done, to take it and listen to it now and come up with their opinion on it, their interpretation of what they think it means. And I think that's exactly what you're seeing when you look at, you know, like you said, you know, Rotten Tomatoes score, and that's the audience doing their part. You know, as an actor, it's once your job is done, I mean, your job is done. It's out of your hands now. Now it's in the audience's hands. You know, I think if you are going to look at any reviews, I think the most important one to be looking at is your other teammates, which is your audience. You know,
right.
See what they think about it. And thankfully, a lot of people are enjoying it and they like it, which is really cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, especially a show that's got such a commitment to authenticity and everything. Like, you don't see that a lot, especially like Jack Carb, like, maintaining, you know, influence throughout the whole thing. That's cool too. Like, that doesn't happen a lot. Like, a lot of things kind of fall apart. So it's cool that this show is kind of remaining pure in that way.
No, 100%. Like, as far as my understanding is, like, most of the time, like, when a novel is adapted for a show or a film, like, the
author
is
absolutely fucked.
Yeah. That a part of it. Yeah. So it's so cool, you know, that they, you know, very much had Jack 100% there, as much as he could be there, you know what I'm saying? So just, that was cool. How often, I mean, from what I know, it's so rare that happens. So it's just like, how cool is that? I mean, what a great thing. And it helped, definitely helped. And you got the boss there with you the whole time, man. I mean, there's no better guide to have.
He had a little cameo in it. You guys see him in that?
He got shot in a car or something, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they threw a little jab at the Marine Corps there too, man. So it's like, that was funny, man. It's funny. It's all good. Everybody gets their little taste of shit, man. You know.
What about that's kind of surprised you? I mean, obviously this was like both yours is like first big show kind of thing. Like, what was like some of the bigger surprises for you, John?
Just being on a set with such a massive production. You know, just being on commercials, it's the budget's so small, but this, like, I couldn't fathom like how much money, like each episode, a couple million, I think, $10 million per episode to make.
I think something crazy.
Wow. Something like that. I don't know the exact numbers. So just being on that set and just seeing them, their process and how they worked, everything was put together, was kind of like eye-opening for me, you know what I mean? And it was such a great learning experience.
And what about you, Alex?
Yeah, no, same for me, man. I think the coolest thing for me, though, man, was not only just getting to meet the great people that I did, guys like John and JD and Chris and Mike Sowers and Ray Mendoza and Jared and Max Adams, all these, you know, Dave DiGilio, the showrunner, and Josh Schumacher, you know, one of the producers, and Jack himself. It was just awesome just getting to be around so many nice people. Like, really nice people that really wanted to
really nice fucking people.
Just be artists and really just create, you know, as Sylvan, you know, the director of 6 and 8, it's just, you know, everybody was there to really make something great and enjoy everybody's company while they were doing it. That, and then not only just being able to work with some of my friends, I mean, I feel like the luckiest guy in the world, man, you know, because my first big kind of bigger little gig. And it's like, dude, I mean, I couldn't have gotten luckier. I was around some of the most kind and gracious creative people I could possibly have been blessed to be around. And I got to go play pretend and have fun with my friends, man. I mean, it's like for a first time, you know, and I made some great new friends out of that too. I mean, it's like, dude, I mean, what more could you ask? I mean, you know what I'm saying? But I mean, really, Alex. You know, I mean, what more could you ask for, dude?
Do you feel like it might have ruined you at all? Like,
right. Set the bar too high.
No.
Next time you're around some like elite Hollywood types, it's going to be like, God damn it.
Yeah, man. No, I think I'm aware enough to know that not every set is going to be like that. You know, the universe only works in balance, man. So you get a little bit of good and then you get a little bit of not so good. But it's cool. You get a little bit of good again. It goes, you know, it's a constant, you know, constant dance that you're doing. But I think eventually, because I'm sure I will find my way onto a set that's maybe not as fun and maybe some people aren't as kind, but you have a reference now, you know, you know what it could be. So it's like, all right, well, maybe I can help uplift everybody else around me and change, you know, the energy around here. I know how nice it can be.
Yeah, that's powerful, man. Yeah, you know what it could be, so you can help get it there, right?
Yeah, you have that frame of reference now. So it's like, you know, they say in the Marine Corps, like, you can lead by example kind of thing. If you're surrounded by a lot of darkness, it's like, all right, well, you be the light. Enough of that will shine through and kind of start lighting up everything else. And the food was awesome. That was definitely my first experience with like crafty like that.
I'm sure it's better than the Marine Corps.
Oh, yeah, dude, 100%, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Air Force, yeah, you guys ate pretty good, right?
I don't know about the Air Force. The Air Force is pretty nice, too, right?
They got to keep you guys pretty. You know?
5-star restaurants are chow hall.
Of course, yeah.
Then I picked up some tricks from some friends about the crafty, taking home some food, getting some extra food.
Put a plastic bag in your backpack.
Yeah, man. You know, Sam, it's just little tricks of the trade, man.
So you can just take this. You don't have to sneak out with it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, like, you're a working paid actor, Alex. Come on.
What's next for you guys in your career? Like, John, like what are you excited about coming up? Like what kind of things are you excited about exploring in the craft and all that?
Just staying busy. I think because of this, my agent's able to pitch me more, right?
To
bigger and That's more cool. opportunities. Like, oh yeah, did you see this? He's in this. Number one show on Amazon Prime, Chris Pratt. Had probably 6 auditions last week. I have more coming up this coming week. I want to stay busy. Even if I'm not booking anything, at least I have the opportunity to work and figure things out. And that's what I want to do, is just keep working and keep getting better at this and improve as an actor. Hope the next step is booking the next show, the next big thing.
And what about you, Alex?
So I've been working on my own feature. I've been writing that with my writing partner. Funny enough, we just actually put the last couple pages down on final draft last night. First draft is done. So now we're just going to go in and the rewriting process, you know what I'm saying? Until we can get it best that we can get it, go through the next stage, man, start pitching it around and try and get people on board that be interested in helping us make it and telling that story. And then I just, the director I'm supposed to work with on kind of part 2 of a little short film I did during the pandemic, like during 2020, with a director named Scott Sloan, a really talented dude, great guy. So I'm supposed to be shooting that, I think, in the next couple months. And then I just did like a little spec commercial with another buddy of mine for Hoka, the running shoes. So I'm trying to see if, you know, maybe we can get them interested in it. Maybe they want to use it. Yeah, just staying busy as well. You know, very similar to John, you know, like things of, you know, picking up on the audition front, which is great. You know, like he said, you know, it's like, even if you don't get a job, it's like the more chances you get to take that shot, eventually you'll get one. And not only that, it's another opportunity to continue honing your crafts. It's important, man.
What's your screenplay about?
Geez, I don't know if I should say anything yet.
You don't have to.
What about genre? Like, is it a dramatic piece? Is it a comedy?
Definitely a drama. I would say so. Okay, so on that, I would say it's definitely aspects of a coming of age film, family drama. It's about a father and a son. I guess this would technically be a log line, I guess, but like pretty much just its story is it's a many things. It's going through stages of grief and learning how to forgive others and forgive yourself. But also it kind of just poses the question of what's the point of loving people if we're all just going to die anyway? What's the point of getting so attached to people if it's not going to last forever? And some lights die out earlier than others and unexpectedly. It very much kind of just poses that question.
John, do you do any writing or directing or anything else besides acting?
No, I rely on Alex to write roles for myself in this movie.
Good call.
So I'm just kidding. I'm not a writer of my trade. I should write. Maybe I don't have enough confidence in my writing ability. Maybe, you know, eventually I'll start. You know, as of now, no, just auditioning and acting.
It's crazy how that works too, though, man. I was in the same way for years. People would always tell me, you gotta make your own shit. You gotta make your own stuff. You gotta write. And in my head, like, you know, my T-Rex peanut sized brain is just like, dude, I don't even know how to fuck. Where do you start? Like, what does that even mean? How do you write dialogue out of thin air? Like, I don't fucking get it, man. Like, I'm like, well, it's because you're not a writer. That's why, like, you're an actor. And I'm like, every time, man, somebody would tell me that, I just like politely just nod my head and I'd appreciate the advice. But I'm just like, in my head, I'm just like, dude, I don't know how to do that, man.
We've had a ton of people come on who they've like made real opportunities for themselves just by kind of taking it into their own hands and writing what they want to write. And then like, you know, writing parts for themselves and starring in it. And like even,
or being friends with like writers and stuff. So.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, what's one of the greatest examples, like Good Will Hunting, right? I mean, like, you know, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, dude. I mean, the guys wrote that whole fucking thing for themselves, man.
Yeah.
It's obviously possible, man. It's not a bad way to do it. And it's definitely, I would say it helps a lot. I feel like as an actor too, because it's like now you have this more intimate understanding of the writer's brain to a degree now, you know what I'm saying? So it's like when you get, you know, audition sides or you book a job and you get the screenplay and you have to start building your character and creating this person, you know, and I feel like it helps give you a more deeper, intimate understanding of, you know, where this person's trying to take this story. So now as an actor, you can create your character that's going to best align with that and help serve them in telling their story and guiding it in the direction that's supposed to go. And I think it also helps in terms of making choices as an actor. It's just like a whole other different part of the brain you get to use now too, you know, but they can complement each other. I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Cause I like it also when like actors become like directors and stuff, cause they have different insights. Right. Like I really like when you guys like branch off and other things. I think it adds a lot definitely to a show's or a movie's potential and all.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, man. Like in the infantry, there's this, you know, we have this saying, you're jack of all trades, master of none. You know, it's very true. Cause you know, you get, like you were talking about the MOS, right? Like your military occupational specialties. It's like you get specialized training on your specific job, you know, the mortarman course and the infantry training battalion. It's like you're a machine gunner, you know, you go to that portion of it. You know, if you're a rifleman, you go to that portion. If you're an assaultman, you go to that portion, you know, and that whole thing. But everybody knows how to do at least the basics of everybody else's job. And that's even broken down platoon-wide, you know, like in a machine gun squad, you have an ammo man. A lot of times you don't have an ammo man, but mostly like, let's say in a perfect world that you did, you have an ammo man, machine gunner, you have a team leader, and you have your squad leader. So it's like the ammo man at any time can be step in and have to become the squad leader. Everybody knows at least the gist of everybody's role and everybody's job. You have to know how to do that too. Because there may be a time where you have to get called upon to go do that. So I feel like it very much can, that mentality can definitely apply in the arts as well. You know, little pieces of kind of everything. I think it just helps make you more of an asset. But you also don't have to learn everything too. I mean, you got some of the greatest actors ever that never wrote a thing. All they did was act, you know, directors. Mm-hmm. All they did was direct, didn't know anything else. But there's no harm in learning a little bit of everything.
No, of course not.
You know, and if you're interested too, you know. I think it all boils down to interest as well. Like, I don't know about you guys, but for me, like, I'm not interested in learning something, man. You're probably not going to get a lot out of me.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
What about dream franchise? I know obviously working on this big Amazon show is pretty much a dream for a lot of people, but what about like, John, is there anything like you would love to get on? Like either like a Star Wars or something like that. What would be your big dream?
Yeah, first and foremost, we talked about earlier, you know, Terminalist 2, fingers crossed for that. You know, they reprise our HRT roles, obviously. But for me, being Korean-American, being Asian-American, my mother's Korean, my father's white, you know, anything that will kind of put Asian-Americans in the forefront as far as leading men, right? Things are changing in Hollywood. But growing up as an Asian-American, I didn't see anybody on the screen that looked like me that played a leading man role. And things are changing now. So like, I would like to be a part of something that where I'm being seen in a more masculine light. Well, you know, being HRT, being a military man, that's obviously more masculine. But just, you know, other things. It doesn't have to be military.
6'5".
Yeah, right. Beard. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be, you know, as a military guy. It can
Bobby Lee.
It could be the guy next door or whatever. You know what I mean? It's just more roles for Asian-Americans where we're not looked at in a less than masculine way. So
Cool, man.
Yeah.
What about you, Alex?
Tom Hardy is definitely one of the actors I would love to work with. I actually met him when I was working at a bar here in LA. And I actually told him that to his face. I was like, I'm going to work with you one day. And he, like, I think thought I was kind of a weirdo. But I haven't made good on that promise yet. So hopefully I'm working my way towards it. You know, I'd love to work with him. I mean, you know, a lot of my heroes, as far as like actors go, you know, aren't here anymore. You know, like the Brandos and the Paul Newmans and mm-hmm. the Sidney Poitiers and, you know, the Jimmy Stewarts, you know, all these giants, you know, they're not here anymore. You know, it's like I can't have the opportunity to work with them and learn from them. But there's new giants of today. But I think as far as like projects go, if I had my choice, I think my dream role would to be able to get a shot at interpreting the Elephant Man.
Okay.
If they ever remade that film-wise, not on the stage, but like actual film. I don't know if David Lynch is keen on making remakes, but you know, maybe somebody down the road. Because I just always found that character very fascinating. You know, we may not look like each other, but I internally resonate with a lot of things about that character. I think it would be interesting to get a chance to see what I could do with it.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one. I don't think I've ever heard the Elephant Man.
Yeah. It's a great film, man.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely a banger.
So good, man. So good.
So one of the other things when I was thinking of like the work you guys done, is it hard watching like not necessarily just military movies and shows like that, but like just anything in that kind of like mind space of like when it's not being authentic, that kind of just piss you off and kind of like pulls you away from enjoying it because it's like that's not how this will happen in real life or that's not how this thing works. Is that like one of the things that's like you kind of have to like live with?
Yeah, for me personally, not even with military stuff, anything that I watch that just is cheesy or just is not very authentic in any sense of the way, it just takes me out of it. And like, I tend to not really try to choose or watch those kind of films or shows. So for sure, you know, definitely in the military aspect, when you see it, you know, on a day-to-day basis in real life and actually being part of something that was very authentic, like now that you watch something, it's like, yeah, this is, I can't watch this, man. You know what I mean? Like, I choose not to. For me, it just, I won't. So
I would definitely say a side with John on that one. I feel very similar. And then, yeah, you know, with the military stuff, yeah, it's a big one. Anytime you see something super inauthentic or whatever, like as a veteran, it's just like, it's got to be compelling and interesting, right? I mean, but that's anything. And if it's not compelling and interesting, then people will lose interest. And I think the more personal and the more genuine something is, I think the easier it is for a lot of other people to connect with that, especially as an actor. You know, when you see an actor that's really personally connected to something and it's really open and really allowing you as the audience to come into their world with them and experience their experience with them, I think it just creates kind of a bond with your audience. You know what I'm saying? It's almost kind of a camaraderie in a sense, like with the military. It's like, you know, here I am, like I embrace you, like come into my world and I will share it with you. The eye candy stuff's cool every once in a while too. You know, the big CGI crazy mm-hmm. spectacle stuff is cool.
Yeah.
Is it though, Alex? Is it though?
It's getting better.
I mean, I don't watch that much, but on occasion I do. Yeah. You know,
yeah, not a huge fan of Michael Bay.
Yeah, he's big, man.
Yeah, he's big.
Big stuff, you know, explosions all over the place, man.
I like an explosion every once in a while.
Yeah, you know, like why not, man? I mean, I just watched Batman and Batman Returns last night.
Yeah,
that stuff's so cheesy,
but it's great, man. It's so great,
though. Definitely nostalgic. Yeah,
but yeah, no, I definitely say I'm Team John with this one as well.
We usually ask one last question of our guests. Any words of wisdom for someone aspiring, especially being a military veteran, looking to get into the industry, something you wish you would have got or something you can pass along to them, looking to get into the film industry and TV industry?
If you love it, man, go for it, right? There's people in the military, like I don't talking shit about anybody, but there's people in the military who go in there and they don't really work that hard at it. But there's people in there who give it their all. You know what I mean? And everything they do. So when you get out and you want to pursue something that you love, like acting, be in class, do that to the max, do 110% and give it everything you got. And eventually you'll get to the point where it's like, you know, looking back, I've made progress. I am a lot further than I started out, you know, and I'm getting there to my goal. So do what you can and fucking get after it.
Look, man, you know, we don't get the luxury of knowing how much time we have here, right? We're just here. So if there's something you want to do, man, you might as well just go for it and do it. No excuses. Just go do it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because what's the point? Might as well try everything you possibly can before your time is up, man. So at least that way, you know that when your clock's getting ready to be punched, you can go peacefully and contently because, you know, you did everything you wanted to do. You know, there's nothing you left out.
No regrets.
you know, as far as getting out of the military and getting into the arts, it can be done. Some of the biggest legends ever in Hollywood were veterans. It can be done. Just because you're in the military doesn't mean you got to get out and be a security guard or a cop. You know, I'm not saying that those aren't great jobs to have. Those are great jobs. You know, those are very needed jobs. But that's not the only thing that you can do. Military people, I think, get caught up a lot of times in thinking, oh, well, that's all I can do. Well, who would hire me for something else? No, man, the world's your oyster, dude. Just go out there and get after it, man. It's like John said, you know, just don't be afraid. And be consistent, be disciplined, keep all that good stuff that you get from the military. Work your ass off, man. Don't be afraid to fail.
That's good advice from both of you. Yeah, no, for
great advice.
Working with like veterans, like, is that one of the things like they are kind of afraid to like make that leap?
You have this thought process of like, there's certain jobs that only military members can get. We learned that discipline in the military. Why can't we apply that to anything that you want to do? It doesn't really matter, right? If that's what you want to go do, just fucking do it.
We really do appreciate talking to you tonight.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's been a blast.
It's been great. It's been enlightening.
Fun, man. Thanks for having us. I appreciate it.
Thank you both for your service as well.
I appreciate that, brother.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you both, man. Josh and Seamus. I mean, guys, it was a real honor to get to talk to you guys, man. And you guys are real fun and real genuine, cool dudes, man. So
appreciate that. Right back at you.
Appreciate the time and you know, and the interesting questions and just, you know, just the genuine interest, man. It just means more than you know. So I had a blast.
I did too, man.
It was great getting to see your good looking face, John.
Whatever, dude. I'm going to text you after this, too. Let's go have a beer.
Where can our listeners find more of you and your work at, John?
Yeah, you guys can follow me at The John Adkins on IG. Such a fucking vain name, but yeah, that's where I'm at on IG. I don't really have any other website or anything like that. It's a work in progress. So yeah, The John Adkins, that's on IG.
And what about you, Alex?
Yeah, sorry, I just had to look it up, man. I got to be honest, I'm not like the greatest with social media.
Dude, stuff. I hate it all.
I only have one as well, which is just Instagram. And yeah, it's just at Alex Angelakis. So that's where you can find all my stuff. Yeah, other than that, no Facebook, no Twitter, no, I don't know whatever else is out there, but
no OnlyFans yet.
No.
I'd subscribe, big boy.
I know John, look at that. John already wants me to start one, man. Here we go.
John, I mean you're pretty enough for it. You could
probably clean out. You probably do really well.
This, believe me, this conversation is going to carry on after the podcast. All Thank you, fellas.
Appreciate you, boys.
All right, John. Nice meeting you.
Have a good night.
Sam. Nice meeting you, Alex, as well.
Sam, brother. Sam, fellas. Yeah. Take care.
They're cool, guys.
Yeah, very cool.
It's interesting, though, like we were talking about the authenticity of the show where, like, they were only hiring veterans and people with military experience. I think, like you said, like, that adds, like, so much, like, so many levels to the show. And, like, I think it definitely kicks it above, like, a certain notch where other shows, they wouldn't really put that much time and effort into it of like, trying to be, like, authentic or making sure you have, like, the shit done right. Or, like, even, like, when he was doing his interview, and all there, making sure he held the rifle the right way and kind of thing. That's really, really interesting because it resonates with people like a certain way, like seeing stuff done properly.
Absolutely. One thing I find interesting, though, is that there's a line where authenticity isn't entertaining anymore. So that's kind of an interesting thing to find out where that line is.
Yeah, because the fantastical. Yeah, and no, I got you.
You know what I mean? Well, even like you could take it to an extreme and be like on a cooking show, you don't want to watch the oven like for an hour while
40 minutes, yeah, you know?
so there is a line where like it's not entertaining anymore. So I think it's kind of, it's interesting to find out where that balance is. But
no, this is funny. Like I can see, like, all right, 37 minutes for the oven, cut, no more than that, then it's no longer authentic. 30,
we did testing, it's exactly 10 seconds that we can show the oven, any more than that,
yeah, no, it's this guy's really cool. I'm glad this worked out. I'm glad you were really, really excited about this one when I presented it to you.
I mean, I've watched like Jack Carr in interviews for years, so it's kind of cool to see go from like writing these things to actually having a show. You know, it's cool to watch that evolution.
It's cool. Like Amazon gave him like they didn't just like bastardize his novel. He actually gave him like the ability to be part of it still and be part like the like a showrunner and shit and. Yeah, part of the creation and all that. I think it definitely adds to the show quite a bit. I think that's why it's doing very well, because A lot of times you see them pick up novels and it's just not the same fucking thing. It's
yeah, completely yeah, different. The last novel I saw that was absolutely horrible was like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It was that was an awesome book. You saw the movie. I'm like, I don't even know how I would follow this if I hadn't read the book. This is ridiculous. It was so bad.
I've never seen it, but that's one of the reasons I'm dreading Sandman. So we'll, hopefully that goes much better. We'll see. Yeah, it's interesting. Veterans, like you hear, like you don't think show business, like he said, it's like veterans usually think, oh, this guy's gonna be a cop or like security guard.
The thing I love about veterans, most people that have gone through something different, they're really down to earth. They have, you just kind of have a deeper understanding of the of how things work and like what the potential is. So it's I always love talking to military guys for that reason. What's up?
Nah, just Rudd.
Oh, Kyle. Well, Kyle's fine. I like Kyle. It's one of our best friends.
Like top five, maybe for me.
That's top five.
Do you break the top 20? I don't even know anymore. Yeah, you know. I don't even have 20 friends. Can you imagine having 20 friends? Who the fuck Jesus has 20 Christ. Friends?
I've got you, Johnny, Kyle, and Randall. That's like four that I regularly talk to.
The best is like you don't even mention your girlfriend on that list.
Oh, she's my girlfriend. She's always here. I'm always with her. Technically, that's my best friend, I guess. But
whoa, you know, the
I mean, like you know, she knows me the best. She's a
really
yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Really,
well, you know, on the things that she can know me on, you know, I'm a little unknowable in some respects. I mean, it's hard not to know somebody. You've been by them for 15 years, you know. Right, anyway, so yeah, back to these guys.
Yeah,
great guys. Yeah. It was interesting hearing him talk about the you know, how Asians are portrayed in Hollywood.
Yeah,
like with the masculinity thing, because like come to my mind, like the two most famous Koreans I know of are Ken Jeong and Bobby Lee, right?
Just because I like cooking and shit.
David Chang. Yeah, what the fuck am I thinking about?
And then David Cho is also
he's on the chef show, right? With
he's been on like Bourdain and shit like that, and he's had a couple shows like Ugly Delicious. Yeah, David's awesome.
I thought David Cho.
Oh, how much? Oh, no, David Cho's the artist.
Yeah, he's the artist. He did the mural at Facebook, and he's that dude. I listened to him talk about like a story. He went into the Congo to find a lost dinosaur, and he just like. He just went in there without a plan. He just went into the fucking Congo and like he almost got lost and died.
That's funny.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that guy's absolutely crazy. One of my favorites there's an Anthony Bourdain documentary that came out not too long ago. And at the end of it, he's like, yeah, I'm going to face a painting of Bourdain. I think he would really appreciate this. And he like just fucking defaced it. It was so awesome. Like it was this big like Bourdain memorial like on a building or something. And yeah, it's awesome. He just like fucks it up. Like, yeah, Anthony would appreciate this. But yeah, Cho's cool.
David Chang is one of my that's probably one of my favorite celebrity chefs.
Yeah, no, he's a really cool guy.
He's really cool.
Yeah,
there's other guy on the chef show.
Yeah, that's a Roy as well. Yeah. Roy's Korean as well. Roy's awesome. They're cool people. Like I really like him.
Yeah, well, the masculinity thing is like a real thing that it's got to be fucked up too, especially like if you're in. If you're coming from the military, you know, and I remember there was a Navy SEAL too that would come on Jocko Willink's podcast, and he's an Asian guy as well. Like, I can't imagine like being portrayed in the media all the time as not being masculine when you've like gone through those kinds of experiences. You know what I mean? That's insane to me.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting concept. Like John, like he's like 6'5". Like that's a I would like yeah, dude. I mean, granted, Air Force, but whatever. No, but it is an interesting thing, and that's why, like, with Shang-Chi, the Marvel movie, you know, that was such a big thing for the Asian community. Actually, having like a superhero, like it's kind of similar to like Black Panther,
yeah,
you know, like having someone that people like even like John said, like there was like not known on screen like for him kind of thing, but like
I like that actor a lot too. I forget his name. Yeah.
But like that's really important for people like to see that like on the screen. The same with like people of different religions, and I know Miss Marvel like is not got like some hate for it.
You said somebody got hate for it.
I mean, the whole show like got shit on.
Why? Because it was bad. People thought it was bad.
Yeah, it did. It got like review bombed, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever. And like people are just people are being people. But
well, like, what were people's problem with it? The main like criticism I heard of Terminal List, like on the first day, it was from all these like kind of left leaning news outlets like CNN, Yahoo News, like stuff like that. They called it a right wing revenge fantasy. That was like the thing. I was like
I don't get that.
What the fuck are you talking about?
No, that's really ridiculous. You believe it or not, they might have paid for those things to make to get more.
You think so?
The show. Absolutely outrageous like that.
It was just like lefty clickbait. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like there's right wing clickbait. It's the same.
Very, very fun tonight. I'm glad this worked out.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the WWSD podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/WWSD_podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I wish life was more interesting. I'd get more out of it. I'm just joking.
Yeah. It was grim.